1 hour in the books, one more to go, and we are flying today. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. Kevin Connors in today for Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests joining us today appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. You can get involved. Get at me on social media, at Kev Connors, ESPN. We're asking you the question, does the Cam Newton signing make the Patriots the favorites now in the AFC East? 888-SAY-ESPN. We'll get to the phone lines in just a minute. But first, your SportsCenter headlines. According to Woj, free agent guard J.R. Smith and the Lakers are working through the final steps of a deal today. Smith would be added to the team's roster for the Orlando restart. And, of course, a nice substitution for Avery Bradley, who is declining to join the Orlando restart. Meantime, Imone Bates, the number one player in the high school class of 2022, has announced he will stay in his home state of Michigan and play for Tom Izzo at Michigan State. Number one player in the class of 2022, Imone Bates, headed to Michigan State. It ain't game day, but you can still feast like it is. Meet Church's new $5 Campfire Smokehouse Chicken. Our fan favorite with a new campfire flavor, plus mashed potatoes and a biscuit. Church's, bringing that down-home flavor. Offer valid at participating locations. Kevin Connors in today for Jason Fitz. First Take, your take, ESPN Radio. Does the Cam Newton signing make the Patriots the favorites in the AFC East? Holland from Texas weighing in on line one. Holland, how are you today?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I would say absolutely not for several reasons. The first being, I like Cam Newton first off, but there's too many ifs to go with him making the Patriots the AFC favorite. The first being, if he is healthy, if he has weapons to throw to, if he is able to incorporate himself into Josh McDaniels' offense. But the biggest reason is Josh Allen there in Buffalo has ascended every single year, and he's staying in the same offense. He just got Stephon Diggs to throw to, and the Bills were only, what, a game or two behind the Patriots, who had Tom Brady last year. So I would say there's no way the Patriots could be the favorites in the AFC East.
You're a man that's talking my language, I tell you that much, as a diehard Bills fan. Look, you're right. I mean, for too long, the Bills have been a punching bag, but the job that Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott have done in building that team and the talent on defense especially is outstanding. And then, of course, you're right. Josh Allen's gotten better year by year. This is obviously a huge, huge year for him. He's got weapons. They've got Devin Singletary at running back, who emerged last year. The Bills' talent is terrific. But as someone who's been burned by the Patriots countless times, though I think the Bills are the favorites, I want to see it first. I want to see the Wicked Witch of the West dead before I officially say the Patriots are not the team to beat. But the question was asked on First Take this morning on the TV side, who goes further this season, Cam and the Patriots or Tom Brady and the Buccaneers? You want to talk about a fascinating conversation. Dominique Foxworth, Stephen A. Smith, Tim Hasselbeck. Dominique starting out by saying the Patriots will because there's only two teams in the AFC better than the Patriots.
Maybe I'm high on recency bias, but I feel like it's Cam and the Pats. I think that there are only two teams in the AFC right now that I know for sure are better than the Patriots, given Cam Newton's addition, and that's the Ravens and the Chiefs. And I think that the Pats will win their division, which I don't think that the Buccaneers will be able to beat out the Saints to win that division, which means that I think the Pats could have a first-round home playoff game with Cam Newton, and I think that's something that they can absolutely win. And I'm not sure that we can see the same thing for Tampa Bay and Tom Brady. I think that they'll have a good season. But I think the Saints will win that division. They'll end up being a wild card game and have a good chance of going on the road and losing that first playoff game. By all means, both teams could make a deep run in the playoffs. But if I have to pick one to have some faith in, I have some faith in the infrastructure and the consistency of that Patriots defense and the innovating ability of Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick around Cam Newton to build an offense that is average to above average, partner with a great defense. I got them winning that division and at least winning one first round playoff game before I have the Bucs figuring it out in the NFC. Well, listen, I could definitely appreciate you having faith in that infrastructure of the New England Patriots. They've earned it. They deserve it. But I'm going to go the route of talent in this particular instance. I appreciate N'Keal Harry and Lacoste. Obviously, Julian Edelman, he should be 100% healthy. We get all of that with James White, with Sony Michel in the backfield. We know what they can do. But have you seen the weapons you have as a rhetorical question? Because you played the game. Tim Hasselbeck played the game. Y'all know the game. I defer to y'all expertise on the NFL. But damn it, that don't mean I have to be blind. I'd see what the hell a Tampa Bay Buccaneers have available to them. And I'm not going to ignore it. You've got a situation where you've got Evans. You've got Godwin. You've added Gronkowski. You've got O.J. Howard. Bruce Arians knows a thing or two about offense. Byron Leftwich has proven that he knows a thing or two about offense as the offensive coordinator. And now you have a guy in Tom Brady that ain't going to throw 30 interceptions in a season. A matter of fact, the most interceptions he's ever thrown in a season is 14. And so considering that reality, you can literally bet on him throwing half as many interceptions or less than what Jameis Winston did for you last season, which means their offense is going to be more prolific. They'll be on the field more. They won't make as many mistakes. They won't soak the life out of the defense because they're on the field all the damn time because they've got to respond to you turning over the football. You'll be able to move the chains. You'll make things happen. You'll still have a potent offense because you were top three last year. You'll probably be that again. I'm looking at the talent that exists along with the style of play that they've got in the NFC South going up against Atlanta, going up against New Orleans. I know the NFC is going to be tough. Please don't get me wrong. I totally understand that. But the multitude of weapons that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to have at their disposal, with Tom Brady being highly motivated, still being able to throw the football, definitely being able to read defense, certainly being able to cut down on a multitude of turnovers, I got news for you. I'm a roll with Tampa Bay right now as making some noise in the NFC. I think they're a legit title contender. I think they're going to make some noise in a prolific fashion on the offensive side of the ball, and I'm going to go with them as potentially going further than the New England Patriots because I think Baltimore and Kansas City are going to meet in the AFC Championship game. I don't know who the hell's going to meet in the NFC Championship game in the NFC because everybody can knock somebody off. So why not think that Tampa Bay can end up there?
Well, listen, they certainly could end up there, but I'm looking at the easiest path. That's why, Dominique, I don't think you're being a prisoner of the moment here. I'm telling you, when you look at the path for the New England Patriots, look, this is going to be the favorite to win that division now. And I will take Bill Belichick and his coaching expertise with a quarterback that's got 182 touchdown passes and 58 rushing touchdowns, you know, since 2011 to 2018. Like, give me that type of production to go with the run game that they already had, to go with the defense that they already have in that division. Dominique talked about winning that division, potentially having a good record where you've got home field advantage, you have, you know, potentially a bye week situation, whereas, you know, when you look at the NFC, especially the NFC South, with all those good teams, I just don't see it happening. And Stephen, I'm glad you brought up the idea of interceptions. Would you say Brady had never thrown more than 14 in a season? Well, Cam's never thrown more than 17 in a season. You know, we kind of get caught up in Cam and his running ability, but I think we often overlook the passing ability. He does have 182 touchdown passes, and he makes good decisions. It's one of the things that we've played this morning when Belichick has talked about Cam Newton. Yes, he's talked about him as a runner, and he's talked about him just as a quarterback and a football player, but he also talked about him as a decision maker. He's been a very good decision maker throughout his career in terms of protecting the football. So I think it's going to be a different look. I think it's going to be really hard to defend. Obviously, the big caveat that everyone has mentioned is his health. But if he is healthy, this is such a massive win for the Patriots.
And the AFC side is so top-heavy. Go ahead, Stephen A.
No, I said I will give Tim credit because even the 17 interceptions that you brought up about Cam Newton, that was in his rookie year in 2017. He hasn't thrown 17 interceptions in the season since his rookie year.
Yeah, and I would say the AFC is so top-heavy. That's why I have more faith in the Patriots winning because there's a chance they could get a team like the Titans, who was okay, and they beat them last year, but I don't think the Titans are world beaters. If you look at the NFC side, you could end up playing Seattle, San Francisco. You could end up playing Stephen A's favorite team, Dallas. You could end up playing Green Bay, one of those teams, Minnesota. Like, those are a lot of good teams. The AFC is not that way. The AFC has a couple teams at the top, and then the rest of the teams, we're not quite sure how good the Colts are going to be. The Texans are up and down. Like, those are teams that I could see being easier matchups for the Patriots on the AFC side than the NFC side. You're going to get stuck. No matter who you play on the NFC side, you're going to get stuck with a pretty loaded team.
Fun debate this morning on First Take. And a reminder, tune in to the ESPN Daily Podcast, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters. Presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Continue to call in and join us today. Does Cam Newton and his signing make the Patriots a favorite in the AFC East? 888-SAY-ESPN. But first, we want to head back to the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line in just a minute, chat with Bill Barnwell. Eli from Kentucky, though, joining us to say the Patriots are not the favorites in the AFC East. Eli, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think Holland, who just came in, made an excellent point about the Bills adding Stephon Diggs, you know, Josh Allen's growth in that defense. But I think we need to look at the, you know, the negatives that have surrounded Cam Newton. You know, his injury history is obviously prevalent. People need to know if he's going to come back healthy. He's only had two seasons over 60% completion percentage. He's never had a back-to-back winning season. And his MVP that everybody wants to talk about was 5 years ago. And since that time, he's had one winning season, and he's played one full season healthy.
All true. Last year was the only year that he missed more than 14 games, that he didn't play more than 14 games, if I'm not mistaken. Last year he played two. So injuries are a factor. Look, it's fair to wonder whether or not Cam is going to be the Cam or anywhere near the level that he was when he won an MVP. But he ain't 37. He's 31. And he's built like a linebacker. So I'm not sure where the notion that Cam is brittle came from, but I'm not buying it. And again, for $1 million, is there another quarterback in the entire NFL making less money than Cam Newton? It's a no-brainer for me. Steve from Florida. Steve, how are you today?
Doing well. Thank you very much.
Steve, what's your opinion? Are the Patriots now the favorites to win the division?
No, they are not. Everyone's forgetting a year ago, right now, a year ago, we were clamoring for information out of Carolina. There was nothing coming out about Newton. And finally, somebody leaked that they were changing his throwing motion to make up for the deficiencies in his shoulder post-surgery. That's big time for me. I don't think he can throw the football like he used to. We haven't seen him do it since. And I think the Patriots did the right thing. Don't get me wrong. They're a better team with Cam Newton. I think Bill Belichick did not hire him for Superman Cam Newton. He hired him for his brain, for his game management skills, and to not turn over the football, and to run the game the way the game needs to be run, and let his defense win the game.
That's fair. It's a good call. And you know what? Look, I mean, as we've heard earlier, the playbook is thick. There's a lot to learn there. The notion that Cam Newton can't do that to me is foreign to me. The fact that he has weapons better than any collectively that he had when he was in Carolina, in my opinion, it helps him dramatically. The offensive line built to keep a quarterback upright. There's a lot of positives. Al from New Jersey joining us on 888-SAY-ESPN. Al, how are you?
Today. Thank you. I just wanted to make a point that Bill Belichick's been a head coach for 25 years. And on the years where his starting quarterback is not named Brady, he has a losing record.
Al, give me that one more time. You're saying he's been the head coach in New England for 25 years.
No. I didn't say that.
He's been a head coach for
25 years.
Right.
And on the years where his starting quarterback is not named Brady, he has a losing record.
So Al's chalking it all up to Tom Brady's success, which, by the way, the years that he didn't have Tom Brady as a starting quarterback are like six. I stop short of saying that the entire success
of the Patriots' run over the past 20 years is because of Tom Brady. Clearly, Brady is the greatest of all time, but I'm not discrediting what Belichick has done. How about Bill Barnwell joining us? He's an ESPN NFL writer and host of the Bill Barnwell Show. Bill, thanks for taking time today. You wrote a very interesting column last night, and you talked about a level of optimism that this move will work out for both sides. Why are you optimistic?
Well, I think I'm more optimistic about Cam Newton's health than I think most people, having watched him last year. I think he was recovered from the shoulder injury he had in 2018. And I do think that the foot injury obviously played a huge part in why he was struggling. But he should be healed from the foot injury. We've seen guys like Taysom Hill and Matt Schaub come back from similar injuries in years past to be productive quarterbacks. So optimistic about his health. Look back to when he was healthy last, was the first half of 2018. Cam was an MVP candidate. He was playing at a really high level. Panthers were in first place, I believe, in the NFC South. They were 6-2 before the injuries did set in. And obviously from the Patriots side, very little risk here. One-year deal for the minimum. You know, if he doesn't make the roster, they don't pay much. They are a team that certainly, you know, they're optimistic about Jared Stidham, but you know, history, this was, would only be the second time in NFL history a team would have a rookie sit his entire season, not start a game, and then start week one of his second season when he was taken after the 100th overall pick in the draft. So a guy who was a moderate prospect who, I mean, you know, could he work out? Sure. But if he had the opportunity to add someone who is, you know, 5 years removed or 6 years removed from an MVP season, a guy who's still only 31, I think you have to take that shot 10 times out of 10.
Right, and a team that, that roster-wise is still capable of competing, not just to be a playoff team, but potentially still to be a Super Bowl team. Bill, let's say that this 100%. Works out. Let's say that this is a home run, that means then that Cam Newton is in store for one major league payday in 2021 and beyond. Under the assumption that he has this career resurgence in 2020, how well-positioned are the Patriots to pay him long-term?
They're in fine shape. They have right now over $80 million in cap space for 2021. The cap issues they have right now are related to Tom Brady and Antonio Brown. Obviously, you know, those guys are not going to be on their cap next year. They're going to be in good shape. I mean, the guy who comes to mind for me here was Ryan Tannehill, a guy who nobody wanted this time last year. The Dolphins had to eat $5 million just to get a draft pick in return for him. And he turned out to be a really valuable quarterback and signed a really is a almost a fully guaranteed 3-year deal, over $30 million a year to stay with Tennessee. So, I mean, Cam can definitely cash in if he plays well. And I do think the Patriots, if they want to continue that relationship, they can afford to do so.
You wrote that Cam would be a schematic replacement for Gronk. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, he's not a tight end. I will say that much. He is definitely a quarterback. But what I think the Patriots thrived upon over the past decade was sort of, you know, hitting it where the other team wasn't, to use the steal a baseball term. You know, when they went big, the other team went big, try and stop them on defense, the Patriots threw the football. When they went small, when they tried to spread the other team out, the other team would go small to kind of match that, Patriots run the football. When you have Cam Newton, when you have Rob Gronkowski, say you had a great run blocker, a great pass blocker, and a great receiver. So he was always be a mismatch, regardless of how the Patriots lined up elsewhere. Gronk was going to dictate what they wanted to do. And with Cam Newton, they have a guy who can do that from the quarterback spot. Obviously, when the Patriots do go with 4 wide, 5 wide sets, they want to spread the field out. Cam is a great power runner, and he's going to be running against those smaller boxes, those lighter boxes on defense. Now, when the Patriots do want to go heavy with two running backs, two tight ends, only one wide receiver, Cam can throw the football in those situations. It's a great downfield passer and a great play-action passer. So I think the Patriots didn't have that sort of schematic diversity last year, and it really cost them. You know, when they brought Sony Michel on the field, we knew they were running. When they brought James White on the field, we knew they were passing. They did not have that level of deception for the opposing defense. So I think by adding Cam Newton, you now have added that back to your offense. I think that's really a core component of what made the Patriots work on offense over the past decade.
Kevin Connor's in today for Jason Fitz. We're chatting with ESPN NFL writer Bill Barnwell, host of the Bill Barnwell Show. He's joining us via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Bill, we've been asking the question to our callers all afternoon. With Cam Newton in the fold, are the Patriots now the favorites to win the AFC East?
Ooh, yeah, it's close, right? You know, I mean, this is a team where, if I'm being honest with you, I thought the Bills were the better team last year. Honestly, I thought they should have beat the Patriots twice. And, you know, the one game Josh Allen gets knocked out, another game comes down to one final drive and a goal line stand. And, you know, are they better? I think with a healthy Cam Newton, I would say the Patriots are favorites to win the division. And I think with Jared Stidham, I would say the Bills are the favorites to win the division. And I think it depends on what we get out of Cam. You know, if the Patriots get a full season out of Cam, I think they're going to be in great shape, and I think they're going to be a Super Bowl contender. And I think this defense, we saw last year, the defense is really, really good, and they have a great coach. So, you know, as long as the defense can be the same as it was a year ago, or close to what it was a year ago, and the offense can just hold up its end of the bargain, even just running the football. It doesn't have to be a great passing attack. If they can just run the football and play great defense, they're going to be very similar to the Bills, and I think they're a little bit better than the Bills at that game.
The notion that they were going to head into the season with Jared Stidham as the starting quarterback never made a whole lot of sense to me, and we find out, of course, that's not the case with the signing of Cam Newton. Bill Barnwell, we really appreciate the time today. Thanks for calling in.
No problem.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance, protecting small businesses with specialized coverages for commercial vehicles. More at progressivecommercial.com. We'll change the conversation from football to baseball and chat with a baseball historian about a fascinating subject that's coming up next. It's First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio. Kevin Connors in today for Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We've been asking you the question all afternoon, and the feedback has come early and often, and it's been interesting. Does the Cam Newton signing make the Patriots the favorites in the AFC East? You can join the conversation, 888-SAY-ESPN. Eric from Tennessee weighing in today. Eric, how are you?
Doing great today. Good afternoon to you. I just want to say I think that, first and foremost, I am a Jet fan, but I have to admit that this makes the Patriots the front runners only because and no one knows how good or how bad Josh Allen is. I mean, he looks pretty bad, and when he's bad, I mean, even, you know, tepid when he's good. He's not a good deep ball thrower, and that's Stephon Diggs' biggest asset. I know we give the Bills a lot of credit, and they're probably going to be okay, but the Patriots seem to, you know, rise, be just good enough to win the AFC East, and that's what all they have to be, right, is just good enough. That's always been their motto. Last year, they weren't that good, but they were good enough. A few years ago, they weren't that good, but good enough. It's almost a blessing and a curse when it comes to the AFC East, is that the Patriots are always just good enough, and I think that's going to be the case this year.
Eric, we appreciate the call. We thank you, your opinion, for weighing in. We will get back to football in just a bit, but we've got a resident baseball treasure at ESPN. Her name is Claire Smith. She's a news editor. She's the first female Major League Baseball beat writer. She was a columnist at both the New York Times and Philadelphia Inquirer, and the first woman to win the J.G. Taylor Spink Award, the highest honor given out by the Baseball Writers Association of America for her contributions to baseball writing. It's my pleasure to welcome Claire Smith into First Take, Your Take today. Claire, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Kevin?
I'm doing great. It's great to talk to you again. And, you know, we could cover any topic from any era of baseball with you, but I want to focus today on the Negro League's centennial, the 100-year anniversary of the birth of the Negro Leagues, which under normal pre-COVID conditions would have been celebrated yesterday by Major League Baseball. As someone who has such a great grasp on the history of the game, and especially this topic, Claire, what can you tell us about how the Negro National League began back in 1920?
Well, it was a loose collection of teams. Semi-pro, if you want to say that. But the organization of those leagues, the American and National League, started with the Monarchs, and it spread to the East Coast, and they became bona fide American National Leagues, which happened to be manned by people of color. The country was segregated, and Black America wanted part of the national pastime, supported the national pastime, and made a very wonderful major league using the talents from their neighborhoods, from the Caribbean, and so on and so forth.
Claire, how renegade was that back then? It's 1920. You're not allowed to play in Major League Baseball. You start your own league. Was that sort of viewed as go ahead, do what you want, or was that considered a renegade move back then?
No, it wasn't considered renegade because in a major way, the leagues provided revenue for the major league teams. Consider that All-Star games were played in parks like Comiskey. World Series games were played in Yankee Stadium. In fact, where there were Negro League teams in major league cities, when the major league team hit the road, the Negro League teams often used the ballparks, paying the rent, bringing in the fans, having the gate, you know. So if you're talking about a country that really, really was, that had two upper middle with many money to spend.
We're losing Claire's signal here, and we hope we can get it back in just a minute here. We're chatting with ESPN News editor Claire Smith about the Negro League Centennial, which, again, under normal conditions would have been celebrated yesterday by Major League Baseball. Claire, can you still hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Claire, you know, from Satchel Paige to Josh Gibson, Cool Papa Bell, Buck Leonard, Monty Irvin, there were so many stars. But, of course, it's Jackie Robinson who breaks the color barrier and makes his debut in Major League Baseball in 1947. It's such an advancement, and yet I'm curious what the impact was on the Negro Leagues.
Well, it was the beginning of the end for the Negro Leagues. The last teams folded in 1960, so you can say that the league survived for a while. But they were basically stripped of every young star that they had. Cool Papa Bell, unfortunately, was considered too old. Josh Gibson died, sadly, too soon after to have ever had his shot. But when you consider teams had open access to Willie Mays, Henry Aaron, Monty Irvin, Larry Doby, Jackie Robinson, and the list went on and on and on. It's important to note that the first African-American superstar that signed in the major leagues without having played in the Negro leagues was Billy Williams. His teammate Ernie Banks came out of the Negro leagues. Mm. So it was a gold rush, if you will, for major league teams. And a lot of teams, especially in the National League, major leagues, took full advantage of it.
In preparing for our conversation today, Claire, I came across a name that I had never heard of before, and that's Eddie Klepp. Is it true the Negro Leagues integrated before Major League Baseball integrated?
That would be the truth if you're referencing, say, players from the Caribbean, from Cuba, and so on and so forth, the Cuban Black Yankees, and so on. Louis Tiant's father from Cuba played in the Negro League. So if that's your reference point, but I can't honestly see the Negro Leagues having turned their backs to anyone of any color because they were experiencing that kind of discrimination. So I would say that, yes, they probably did integrate well before Major League Baseball.
Just remarkable. Remarkable that a white player played in the Negro Leagues before a black player played in Major League Baseball. That's part of the story that I had not known until digging in here. We're chatting with Claire Smith on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Claire is a treasurer at ESPN. She's a baseball historian and an ESPN news editor. And by the way, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Claire, outside of the obvious, which is the integration of the game and the flood of incredible players into Major League Baseball, what is the legacy of the Negro Leagues?
The Negro Leagues' legacy, I would say, was the ability of a community to really make their stars so iconic that they became part of the lore of a game before they were allowed to play in the major leagues. Major leaguers wanted to test their strengths against Satchel Paige. They wanted to see this man named Josh Gibson, who legendarily hit a ball home run out of Yankee Stadium. They wanted to see Cool Papa Bell. They knew that these players were major leaguers who happened to have a different skin color. They barnstormed against the major leaguers and the Negro League All-Star teams barnstormed against each other. Went down south, the Bob Feller All-Stars versus the Satchel Paige All-Stars. They knew that they were facing equals. And I think maybe the most poignant example of that was Larry Doby, who tells a story after he integrated the American League on July 5th, 1947, when he signed with the Cleveland Indians. As soon as the Indians met up with the Boston Red Sox, he said Ted Williams came over, shook his hand, and said, "You're a major leaguer. Welcome."
Wow. That's powerful. Claire, when you talk politics, which we're so afraid to do so often, but when you talk politics, no one can agree on anything except the celebration of the centennial of the Negro Leagues is crossing political lines here. How is this being celebrated on the political landscape today?
Well, today, for instance, you have four living former presidents. Each one of them has sent either a letter in Jimmy Carter's case or a video in the Tip Your Cap campaign, where tipping your cap to someone, as you know, is a sign of the utmost respect. So you have Barack Obama sending in a video where he tips his cap, which is a White Sox cap. You have Bill Clinton wearing a Cubs cap, tipping his cap. And I'm sure when I get to see the George W. Bush cap, he'll be wearing the Texas Rangers cap, as that was the team he once owned. But they're not the only ones. It's across the spectrum of sports and celebrity. Michael Jordan has a video online celebrating the Negro Leagues, Billie Jean King, and Magic Johnson, and on and on and on. These gentlemen and these women know that if that barrier hadn't been broken, they might not have enjoyed the careers that they came to enjoy. Without Jackie, not only wouldn't there perhaps have been a Michael Jordan, Dr. Martin Luther King famously said, without Jackie, there wouldn't have been a Dr. King. Because
wow.
What Jackie did with the Dodgers in 47 was the precursor for the civil rights movement of the 60s. If he had failed, that movement might not have ever been born.
I mean, I've said this many times before, there's no more significant athlete at the professional level in the history of sports than Jackie Robinson. I think that holds true. Claire, we're running long, and I'm going to draw the wrath of our crew, but I would be remiss if I did not ask you, if we pivot the conversation here, as someone who knows and loves the game so well, if we didn't get your perspective, how would you best sum up the way today's players and owners handled their negotiations to return to play over the past 3 months?
Well, if they didn't handle it the way they did, they would have been unrecognizable. That is baseball. That is how they handle every labor situation. But I think that what awaits them is a starker reality than dollars and cents. Now they have to do the really tough work and have to partner in a way that's perhaps unprecedented in sports. And that's making everyone safe. They might start on July 23rd. There's no guarantee that they make it to October if this virus rages, especially in the major league cities where it's spiking now. So there's going to have to be such a massive sense of partnership and diligence that it's not dollars and cents anymore. It's life and death.
I wish them all the best. I hope that they can, for maybe the first time ever, really show a sense of cooperation, because their lives literally depend on making this work in a healthy way. Make it work healthy, and then everybody should be happy.
Educational and informative and always on the money. Claire Smith, what a treat. We really appreciate you taking time to be with us today.
Thanks a million for having me. And everybody stay happy and healthy over at ESPN, the campus that I miss. Stay happy and healthy. Thank you.
Indeed. Claire, thanks so much. Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less, only at Walmart. Coming up next, is too much being made of NFL players working out? We discuss that next. First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio. Down the stretch we come on First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio. Kevin Connors in today for Jason Fitz, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. This is Shower Sessions, half interview, half concert, all from the shower. Watch new music videos and exclusive interviews now at youtube.com/progressive. We've been hearing about how some players have taken some time this offseason to get together, get out on the practice field. And it sounds, and we've seen the videos on social media, sounds like it's a great idea. Seems like these guys are really interested in gelling as football players. Except the NFLPA and Damaris Smith, the executive director, have advised that it's not in the best interest of player safety, gathering and having these practices. Dominique Foxworth this morning on First Take saying, you know what? It seems like it's a great idea, but guys, it's not worth the risk.
I think that D. Smith is right, and I think the risk-reward analysis in this situation makes it obvious that the players should stay home. Like, if you think that you're going to make up for this entire offseason by having some group workouts here and there, and somehow you're going to gain great leaps and bounds of how consistent or how effective your offense is, I think you're fooling yourself. But if you do think that you're exposing yourself to a virus, that's true. And you're also sending a message to the rest of the league that they're falling behind, and then they're going to expose themselves also. And I think that's a problem. That's dangerous, and it's in no one's best interest to miss the season, no matter how much better you think you can get, which I think is marginal in this offseason, this unique offseason. I think they should stay home to make sure that we all, to do the best they can to ensure that we all have football and we all have a season going forward. And I do think that it makes it difficult for Damaris Smith and the union to negotiate for better protections of the players when it the image that they're projecting is that they don't really need the protection or they don't really want the protection.
Dominique Foxworth putting a bow on things for us today on First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio. I'm Kevin Connors. Thanks for listening. Randy Scott, Katie George coming up next.